This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. With early voting underway and Election Day just weeks away, we spend this hour talking with the two candidates vying to be Charlotte's sixth mayor in 4 years. We're on stage at the McGlohan Theater at Spirit Square with Republican candidate Kenny Smith and Democratic candidate Vi Lyles. Voters, including some who have joined us in this theater, have already decided that a change is in order because the incumbent is not in the race, making Jennifer Roberts the first elected mayor in 30 years to be denied the chance to run again. That's a change, but what won't change are the challenges that await the new mayor, wrestling with affordable housing and issues of economic mobility. The next mayor will also have to deal with patching relations between police and minorities and the rising murder count, which is on track to be the city's highest since the 1990s. Heavy work for a part-time job, but we'll find out what the candidates for that job think about those challenges and others. And since a new poll by Spectrum News shows the candidates virtually tied with 19% undecided, this hour could help you make up your mind. So let's get to it. Please welcome Mayor Pro Tem Vi Lyles and City Councilman Kenny Smith. And as always, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks. You can even use the hashtag WFAE_debate. And you can also watch us this morning on Facebook Live. Well, let's begin with a very basic question. Why do the two of you want to be the mayor of Charlotte? And I'll go ladies first. Vi Lyles.
Thank you, and it's great to be here in Spirit Square. What a wonderful place to be first thing in the morning, and thanks to the listeners of your show, Mike. So why? I actually just want to say I love this city. I came here to go to Queens College, and I began to see the city grow. I've seen it grow, and I've thrived in it. And I've had the opportunity to serve in many, many ways. My experience working as the city's budget director and assistant city manager, but also in community relations and with many boards, our foundations, and our not-for-profit community. I'm running because I believe it's time for change. I believe it's time to act on the things that we've been talking about for a year or more: good-paying jobs, affordable housing, and great, safe neighborhoods.
Okay, Kenny Smith.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for having us. I told you on the way in, this was one of my late father's favorite shows and rarely missed it. I did not learn that until after he had passed, but it's exciting to be here today to share our vision for the city and thank everybody that came out and all your listeners. I'm running for very simple reasons. I look at the last couple years and the chaos our city has endured and looked at some of the challenges that you outlined so eloquently in your intro that we face. We are a city that has gotten off track. We've gotten away from the core functions of local government. I believe the core function of local government is public safety, infrastructure, and jobs, economic development. I think we've spent much of the past 2 years dealing with issues that don't fall as heavily in that range. And I think that I have the leadership, the vision, communication skills, and ability to work hand in hand across the aisle with my colleagues to help push us in the right direction. The decisions we make in the next 2 to 4 years are going to impact our city for the next 50. To put that in context, Ballantyne is only about 20 years old, and now it's probably 5.5 million square feet of office space, 2.5 million square feet of retail, thousands of homes. Not that long ago, it was farmland, and we ride past, many of us ride past that every day for various reasons, and you look at it, and it's now a booming part of the city. So we're going to have really big things happening in the next 2 to 4 years.
Both of you are on city council where you have a vote. The mayor does not vote except to break a tie, and the mayor really has no official power. Mm-hmm. So why give up your city council seat to be the mayor? Vi Lyles.
It's not giving up something. It's actually looking at what we have and the situation that we're in and seeing the need for leadership. The mayor has a very important role. especially engaging with citizens, talking to citizens so that we can bring forward from the community the ideas that we need to have at the dais. You know, a lot of times people think that the city council just sits and raises their hands, but it takes a collaborative leader to make sure that the city council works. And over the past term, for the last 18 to 20 months, I've acted as that leader with my colleagues. I've been the person that says, we need to sit down and look at this issue. We need to decide how we can move it forward. And we don't always agree, but we have to have someone in the mayor's office that's going to focus on action and change in those areas that are very important. So it's not giving up something, it's actually stepping up for something, Mike. It's stepping up to talk about how we can have collaborative leadership and how the city council can move an agenda forward.
Kenny Smith.
You know, that's a question you get a lot. And the first thing I would say is we've all seen what's happened when you've had a mayor that doesn't have the leadership skills necessary. And you look at the past 2 years and everything we've dealt with, you had a mayor that wasn't quite up for the task, and obviously she's not on the ballot. So for me, this is about assuming the leadership role, providing your vision and blueprint for the city. The mayor's in the center seat. The mayor gets the most coverage. The mayor, in many ways, has the bully pulpit. And so I've got a vision for the next 25 years for our city and the way to help grow that and implement that and make sure that we're ready for those challenges. The mayor controls what goes on the agenda. The mayor has the ability for the veto. The mayor is the face of the city at good times and bad times, during times of crisis. I think the citizens of Charlotte are looking for somebody with a steady hand, strong leadership skills, and the ability to keep the city on task. And then it's about working with our colleagues. I'm one of two Republicans on council, 9-2. I don't get anything done if I don't extend my hand across the aisle and have good relationships with my colleagues. And I think we've been missing that, and I think that is something that we'll bring back to the, or I'll bring back to the mayor's office.
Well, I was going to ask the two of you why you think Jennifer Roberts is not sitting up here on the stage today. I think I know what your answer to that question would be, but you agree with Jennifer on a lot of issues, Vi Lyle, so tell me why you think she's not sitting in your seat today.
You know, I want to say that people often say that I agree with Jennifer Roberts on a number of issues. And that may be those issues that are around how do we move our community together forward. I really respect the idea of how do we create opportunity for everyone. And that's something I'm going to support. But what I would say to you is I believe that one reason that Jennifer's not sitting here is because I won the primary. And I think that I won the primary because every day I go out and I talk to voters about what's important. And my entire message during the last several months when competing in that primary is that it is about the people of this city having an advocate in the mayor's office that unifies the agenda, that we know we have lots of discussions about problems, and we know what those problems are. And I believe that people in this community are expecting a mayor that has the experience to act, to be able to figure out how to get things done. And that's why I'm sitting here today.
Both of you have talked about being a leader and setting the agenda and having a vision. You mentioned the term bully pulpit, Kenny Smith, that the mayor has the bully pulpit here. Certainly, Jennifer Roberts had the bully pulpit, and she used it on several different issues that you obviously disagree with her on. But how far would the two of you go to push your own vision, your own agenda, the way Mayor Roberts did, in a way that perhaps would be surprising to some and not on the agenda of other members of City Council? Kenny Smith.
So my agenda, again, is straightforward. I want to get back to basics. I want to get back to the core functions of local government, safety, infrastructure, in jobs. I often ask groups, raise your hand if you think a pothole is a Democrat or Republican. Like, once you get the joke, you realize it just wants to be repaired. The first thing I'll do on day one is sit down with the city manager, sit down with our department heads, and bring in community leaders, and we're going to craft a 25-year vision across all departments so that we will be ready for the growth that's coming. We know that we're going to add 400,000 people by 2040. We have the data. We may not have had the data in the late 80s when Charlotte really started to take off, but we know we'll be at about 1.2 million people by 2040. we need to make sure that we are able to deliver all the services our citizens need. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we have the transportation infrastructure that our citizens need. We need to make sure water, sewer, planning, housing. We need to have a fully integrated plan across departments to make sure that when we're sitting in 2040, we're not looking back saying, why didn't we make decisions?
And we don't have those plans. By God, we've done 10,000 shows on all the numerous plans the city has
We have been very reactive. We do not have a plan in place that sits down, that is integrated across every department to make sure we're all pushing in the same direction.
Do you agree with that, Viola? So you used to work for the city.
I did. And so the question was about the mayor having a vision. This vision is not the mayor's agenda. It is a community agenda. It is what the citizens have asked us to do for the last 2 to 3 years. And it's really around the idea and the commitment that the city council unanimously made to the city that we would try to create good-paying jobs, so that we would try to get people trained for the jobs of the future. We talked about affordable housing. We've had affordable housing plans that are required by the federal government, 10 years of affordable housing plans. And then we finally talked about trust and accountability. So I think that this agenda that you talk about, the vision, is really the community's vision. And what they've asked us to do is to implement that vision. And I know that we've had the number of 20-year plans, but think about this. If we have 20 and 25-year plans, how nimble can we be when an Amazon comes or whatever the next person is or business that says, we need you to shift focus quickly? Now, I believe in plans, but I really believe right now we have enough planning. We've got to begin to do things. We've had goals to end homelessness. We've had goals to build affordable housing. We've had goals to have a transportation action plan that includes transportation options and a rail system. All of those things are out there on the table. It's time to do. It's time to act. And that's why I want to be mayor.
Kenny.
So all the citizens can't occupy the mayor's office. The citizens are going to elect somebody they think has the leadership skills necessary to take an 11-member body and push them forward. It is community plan. And if you go back to part of what I said, we're going to have community leaders sit in on this. If you look at in the late 80s when Charlotte really started to take flight, when we landed the Hornets, for example, when the banks started to take off and we started to attract people here, what if we had a vision and a plan in place for where future roads should go? What if we know they're coming? So now we know it's indisputable. People are coming to Charlotte. We're going to add 400,000 people. That's Cleveland, that's Raleigh or Pittsburgh. Pick one of those three cities, pick them up, and drop them in Charlotte. We may have a better road system in South Charlotte or in the university area where we still have farm-to-market roads carrying cars, 18,000 cars a day, for example. So to me, setting a course, setting a plan, having metrics in place and the ability to take your year-by-year progress to make sure that we're ready.
I have 1 minute left in this segment. I'm going to give you each 30 seconds to tell me what differences there are between the two of you. What makes you different from Viola?
I voted against toll roads. I voted to support affordable housing. And I voted to support affordable housing with the opportunity to divert funds that were going to go to Major League Soccer and take some bond money out of Bojangles. I feel as though that I have stronger leadership skills. I work across the aisles and When Charlottines need me, I'm there.
Vi Lyles, you have 30 seconds.
I work across the aisles. I have strong leadership skills, and I've got experience on how to make things work.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about a lot of issues that are facing the next mayor will face, including the Amazon issue, because we may or may not get Amazon, but there's a lot of money at stake if we do get them, one would presume. And we'll do that from McGlohan Theater here at Spirit Square when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
We'll get right back to our conversation between Charlotte mayoral candidates Vi Lyles and Kenny Smith live from Spirit Square's McGlohan Theater in just a moment. Support this morning comes from WFAE members and Acadia Shutters, a specialty retailer of custom-crafted blinds, shades, and plantation shutters. The staff of Acadia Shutters is available for in-home design consultations throughout the Charlotte Metro. AcadiaShutters.com. And from Hendrick Volkswagen of Concord, offering over 250 new and certified used Volkswagens. Details at Hendrick Volkswagen of Concord at the Concord Mills exit or HendrickVWofConcord.com. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, we look into charges that Mecklenburg County's mental health care provider has abused public dollars. Then we hear from two visually impaired artists making art for those with disabilities. That's Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, a chemical industry insider now has a top job at the EPA and is rolling back rules on toxic chemicals. Is safety being compromised? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're at McGlowan Theater at Spirit Square today with the two candidates for Charlotte Mayor, Democrat Vial Iles, Republican Kenny Smith. There are lots of different brands of Democrats and Republicans. So tell us how you would describe yourself politically on the timeline, from deeply conservative to deeply liberal. Where are you, Kenny Smith?
It comes no shock. I'm not deeply liberal. I'm pragmatic and principled, respectful and resolute. I'm my own thinker. I've stood up against my party on multiple occasions. Again, toll roads was one where we had a lot of pressure, both from Raleigh Chamber of Commerce and from the development community. I voted for what I thought was best interest of Charlottians on that. Affordable housing is not something you often think of Republicans as championing. I was the first candidate for mayor and first member of council to put forth a public plan on that. It's an issue I believe deeply in and been working hard on. So I'm pragmatic but principled. And I think if you look at my voting record, I always put the taxpayers' interest at heart and take that very seriously.
Vial Iles?
You know, the good thing about this race is that there, on the votes that we have, there are probably just a few differences. So on the toll road, that was a decision made with a number of council members that voted the majority to direct my vote. I was also one of those folks that voted affirmatively for the toll road because the issue wasn't toll roads. It's how are we going to pay for roads? And right now, user taxes, gas taxes, are what we're using. That gas tax is going down, so how are we going to pay for the next one? Are we going to raise everybody's taxes, property taxes? Well, no, these are federal highways that come out of the state. NCDOT is looking at how they're going to do that, and nobody wants toll roads. I don't want toll roads. But we had a situation started in 2011 with the Republican administration in Raleigh, and they carried it through. The second thing on affordable housing, when we talk about affordable housing, my roots are deep from the homeless issues, Away Home, our endowment. That was something that I worked on. I don't know if many people remember, but Charlotte was one of the very first communities when I was the budget director that said affordable housing bonds are important to a city. Now we need to step that up. And I would say when you talk about where I am on a spectrum, I'm all about what can Charlotte be? What can we do to include everyone in our economy? What can we do to make every child successful in school? What can we do to have neighborhoods that are stable? And that when my idea is to look back 20 years from today and say, I was a part of making this city what it is. That means that we've left no one behind. I can walk in every part of this city and be welcome. I can knock on doors everywhere, from the barbershop to the boardroom. That's the kind of vision that I have, and that's my idea around leadership.
What do you see as the three most important challenges that are facing Charlotte and the next mayor? And you can rank them in order of importance. Kenny Smith, I'll start with you.
I think public safety. You've seen the spike in murders. We need to make sure we keep our citizens safe. You can't walk anywhere in the city and not have that conversation come up. Beatty's Ford Road should be just as safe as Barkway Downs Drive. I think you have economic mobility, jobs, jobs that comes up everywhere you go. We're 50th out of 50 in economic mobility. That is not a Republican problem. It's not a Democrat problem. It's a Charlotte problem. We need to have good-paying jobs for everybody in the city so that they can afford to live in our city. They can provide for their families. And then we need the infrastructure. That's one we see every day, whether you're stuck in traffic or whether you're looking at new development that's coming and we don't have water sewer capacity. I mean, those are very critical issues that as our population continues to grow at a rapid pace, we're a suburban city. We're a suburban footprint that's rapidly urbanizing, and we're going to have a lot of challenges over the next 10 to 20 to 30 years that we're going to have to be prepared to address.
By Lyles?
I think that one of the things that I think about on what's most important for us to challenge is the work that the community has done about the Economic Opportunity Report. And they point out several key challenges. But I grew up in the segregated South, and they talk about the vestiges of segregation. What I believe is we need to look through a lens of how our policies and programs and activities have been caused by some of that. So I do believe it's important to look at that study and to implement those things that we need to do locally to make a difference in everyone being able to work in our city and live in our city. I think that's helped by having quality transportation systems that are affordable. I think it's helped by having policies that address crime and safety and quality neighborhoods. You know, safe neighborhoods have a sense of a feel, sidewalks, trees, things like that. But it also has to have that sense that you're not going to be afraid of your police department. You're going to actually welcome them into your community. So we've got to deal with the issue that communities identify themselves as being someone that they can count on government. Those are intangibles, I know. But the intangibles of what brought us here today, public-private partnerships, our traditions, our values, that's what we need to work on and focus toward.
Mayor Roberts was criticized for how she handled the unrest that followed the shooting of Keith Lamont Scott. What would you have done differently, Vi Lyles?
It's not only what I would have done differently, it's what I did differently. I was actually in Marshall Park, and I remember people being there without microphones, and they were trying to get their voices heard. And when they couldn't, they said, well, let's go down to the epicenter. That's one of those places that people go because they know that people will pay attention to them there. And that's really regrettable. It's not the kind of design that we need to have where we have people that can't be heard in a public space. I really hope that one day Marshall Park will need a place for gathering so that people can be heard in protests. But more importantly, what I would say is that I would support our police department in a way that really said to them, we're in a crisis mode now, and we need to have our police department follow through and not be concerned with the idea of what we're saying on national television or what we're doing there, but actually working with that crisis management team to get us to respond so that people can have a safe environment. The day after the protests were done, I went to the Charlotte Uprising meeting. And for all of the painting of that, those folks are truly committed to trying to make changes. Now, sometimes they say things that perhaps we're unaccustomed to hearing in our polite Charlotte community. But you have to go and peel back that and look at what is their commitment. And they've talked about teaching de-escalation in neighborhood issues and conflict. I believe that the follow-through with the police foundation, the follow-through with the many community groups that examine this issue is what I am doing now.
What would you have done differently?
I would have had strong, calm leadership, helped keep the city calm. There were a lot of rumors flying around social media, various things, and it's sort of what I did. I took my children to the staging area to take CNPD supplies, water, snacks that they desperately needed as they were working 12 hours on, 12 hours off for over a week. It's something that was important for me, for my kids to see the people that were sacrificing to keep our city safe and keep the protesters safe. I would have made sure that I was accessible to the local media. Mayor Roberts went on, I think, 43 times on national TV. That's Fox, CNN, MSNBC. I don't think a Charlottean should have to turn on the national news to know what's happening in their neighborhood.
So you'd walk away from that? You wouldn't do that?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't be on CNN?
I would have done local interviews And I think that our mayor didn't do any local interviews. And I think that there were citizens, there were issues such as the curfew, that citizens were trying to understand, what does this mean? How does this impact? Mm-hmm. Where are the protesters? What's going on? And, well, hang on, let me finish. And then the other thing that I did, one of the nights of the protest, all the protesters came down to city council, to our chamber. It was a night that was filled with intense anger, intense passion and feelings. And at the end of that meeting, we had an opportunity to either walk out the back door, which would have been very bad for the city, it would have been very bad for what was going on in the chamber, or we had the opportunity to walk out there and try to start the healing and show that it's going to take all of us to fix the problems in our city.
Can a mayor really ignore the national media when our streets are filled with protesters and police officers going at it? Can you really avoid the national media? What message would that send?
I didn't say avoid the national media. There was a pervasive thought that the mayor was promoting her interest for the next political office more so than tending the farm, so to speak. But again, when you have citizens that are calling you saying, I hear protesters are in South Park, and stuff that's not true, you got to be able to talk to your local citizens.
Both of you in this segment of the conversation have talked about being a friend of the police in times of crisis like this, taking them snacks. I think, Kenny, you mentioned that. And a lot of people have talked about not trusting the police. So how do you balance that equation? How do you build trust in the police? How do you talk to those communities where they feel the police do not have their best interests in mind, and yet support the police in times of crisis that have in situations that have erupted because of what the police have or have not done?
You know, I think this is a really good point, and I hope that as a community we understand the complexity of all of this. When you're in a crisis situation, and I've been through a few, you have to deal with the issues that first keep your people safe and keep your, and that people means our police department as well as our citizens. And so that's your first and foremost priority. But then what you have to do is also look at what's the next step. So when we were talking about the Keith Lamont Scott shooting and when we were talking about the protests, it was important for me to go to the Charlotte Uprising meetings because I had to have an understanding of what they were saying. It was also important every morning at 6 a.m. I sat in a briefing room with Kerr Putney, our police chief, and we went through what do we do, what can we do better, what can we do differently, and always have in your head the support for the people that are on the line, those men and women that are in blue, that had to stand there, that were working 12-hour shifts. And at the same time, how do people have the right to protest? This isn't going to be our last time. Remember, this is the context that we were on national television because of Ferguson, because of Baltimore. And this is a national debate and dialogue. We're all going to have to figure out how Charlotte fits in this by bringing everybody along and having an understanding. It's not enough to just listen and go out into the audience. You have to actually listen and learn. So that's what's important. And I am listening to both our police department, our police leadership, and I'm listening to those groups that feel disenfranchised, the neighborhoods that feel that they've been left out, and our opportunities.
So I think the question was, how do we help fragile neighborhoods that need the police the most? How do we help them regain trust in the police department? We have a phenomenal program, Cops and Barbers, that has worked. We have been working on diversion programs. We are having community forums all across the city. I attended one recently in Northwest Charlotte, where we had officers and community members sitting down at tables getting to know each other better. And we need to figure out a way to get more officers on the force. We're down about 240 officers. What that does is that prevents us from upping our community policing program. There was a time in our country where you knew your officer. Think about it. You know your barber. You know your kid's soccer coach. You may know your kid's teacher or other folks in the neighborhood, but people on a regular basis don't know the people that are coming through their neighborhoods and trying to keep them safe. So you got to have an up-close relationship. You got to have a visible relationship. Chief Putney often says you can't hate up close, and those, are, I think, are tremendous words that we can all live by, and I think if we can get the police force beefed up and we can get out into the community with them on a regular basis. You continually see social media posts where you see officers, the CMPD is trying to promote the good things that they're doing in the community to help everybody, but it's going to be a joint effort. It's going to take all four corners of Charlotte to make that a reality.
So you can participate in this conversation through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org or on Facebook or Twitter. And if you're on Twitter, you can use the hashtag WFAE_debate. But we asked listeners to provide some questions in advance of their own, and we're going to be scattering them throughout the rest of this conversation. The first comes from Savone. I hope I'm saying Savone's name correctly on Facebook. Affordable housing in Charlotte seems to have city government baffled. What real solutions do you have? And she adds, refrain, please, from empty platitudes. That would be appreciated. What solutions do you have? But Kenny Smith.
I've got a four-point plan. We need to establish a land trust. So we need to get the philanthropic sector, the corporate sector, and the faith community together to have seed money so that we can buy land throughout Charlotte. Land cost is one of the biggest, if not the single biggest, challenge to affordable housing. Once you go vertical, costs are similar. I like to say if you neutralize land costs, which is a fancy way of saying free land, once you go vertical, the costs are the same, so we can attract more people that will be willing to get in the market. Two, we need to have targeted rehabilitation. We've lost units in South Charlotte that are aging market-rate apartments that are in the 40-plus years old. Developers and owners cannot justify putting money into that. So if the housing trust were to find some of those on a proactive basis before they got rezoned and tore down, and we build them up, make them higher quality, and then the owner in return will give us a predetermined period of time on lower rents. We need to up the bond offering. We've established that this is a community issue. We've established from a council standpoint that it's a community issue. $15 million bond offering is not enough. And then finally, we need to re-examine the locational policy. If we want to make a dent in the number of units that are out there, we can't take areas off the map. And then lastly, we have to be creative. We have to take opportunities like the opportunity we had a few months ago to divert money from soccer, take bond money out of Bojangles, and put that into housing. That's a creative solution that we need to do. But we know this is a community issue. We've heard loud and clear that it's a community issue, and I think we can act accordingly. And I don't think those were platitudes. I think those were all pretty simple, straightforward solutions.
You may not have heard soccer died, but Vi Lyles, what's your answer?
You know, the thing that I'm most proud of is after the Keith Lamont Scott shooting, I wrote a 7-point plan that presented to my colleagues, and unanimously we adopted three of those in the key categories, affordable housing being one of them. The thing that I think we can speak and not in platitudes are exactly what Councilmember Smith has said. We have action plans. All of those are important. And all of those are ready to move forward. The things that I would add to that is that we have the opportunity to look at our rent subsidy endowment. It's called A Way Home. Right now we focus on rapid rehousing for our homeless veterans and people in our shelters. What we've learned is that in our study, people are able to pay rents, but sometimes the rent, because of development, they're escalating faster than wages have in the past community. So people have been paying $500 and $600. One of the things that I believe is important is that we actually look at that endowment, working with the private sector, to say, how do we keep people on their jobs? Many of you remember there was a story on WBT. Wife was disabled, child is at Northwest School of the Arts. He was working third shift. Rent went up $100, and they were so stretched. If he was paying $600 a month, and we can give that $100 to keep that family from being homeless, to keep that child in a good school, that makes a difference. So that and the acquisition of apartments that we can renovate and rent at affordable rates.
We're sitting here with Kenny Smith and Vi Lyles, and we will continue in just a moment at Charlotte Talks.
More of our conversation with Charlotte mayoral candidates Vi Lyles and Kenny Smith in just a moment. We're live from Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Doctors Making House Calls. Physician-owned and managed, Doctors Making House Calls works to help complex patients stay healthy at home and avoid unnecessary ER visits and hospitalizations. Details available at doctorsmakinghousecalls.com. And from Museum of York County, hosting Spooky Science this Saturday from 10 to 4 p.m. Children can see creepy creatures, carnivorous plants, and hear the sounds of the theremin. South Carolina is just right. chmuseums.org. Coming up at 10 o'clock on Point in about 20 minutes, a chemical industry insider now has a top job at the EPA and is rolling back rules on toxic chemicals. Is safety being compromised? Tom Ashbrook and his guests take a closer look. It's On Point coming up at 10 o'clock.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
China's Communist Party gathers to choose new leaders who will rule the world's most populous country for the next 5 years.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
Huntersville, Cornelius, and Pineville want to police their own unincorporated areas, known as extraterritorial jurisdictions, or ETJs.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. We're in McGlohan Theater at Spirit Square with a live audience because our two candidates for mayor, Democrat Vi Lyles and Republican Kenny Smith, are with us on the stage taking our questions and yours from Facebook and Twitter and also email. I wanted to follow up, Kenny Smith, with you, and you used the word vertical when you were talking about affordable housing because land costs are the big factor here. And so if you take a piece of land and you go up on it, as in high-rise, mid-rise, whatever, the costs become, they equal out. So hold on. So when you go vertical, what people think about, I think, in many cases, when you're particularly talking about affordable housing, are projects like Cabrini Green in Chicago. How do you prevent that from happening?
So just for clarification, so I'm in the real estate business. So horizontal is when you're developing your infrastructure. Vertical is whatever you build on top of that.
Right.
So we're not talking about, you know, massive high rises. We're talking about the vertical construction cost as opposed to the horizontal construction cost. So as you're developing a project, you have land acquisition costs, site work, infrastructure that you put in, and then you have the vertical cost. So, and if you look at most of the projects that we've approved around town, they tend to be 2 to 3 stories. Okay. Most of them are capped at about 60 feet in height.
So switching gears here, Christy on Facebook wants to know about the murder problem. It's no secret. We have a rising murder rate. It's not as bad as it was in the 70s, perhaps the 80s, but it's certainly growing beyond what we had in the 90s. And Christy on Facebook wants to know, with gun violence plaguing us around the country, what can the city do? What can a mayor do to lessen that gun violence?
So again, that goes back to one of your first questions, role of mayor. Why do you want to do something that gives up a vote? First thing we can do is mayor can ride up to Raleigh. They can sit down with the legislator, and we can figure out how to make sure we have stiffer penalties for folks that obtain guns illegally, and then folks that distribute guns illegally. About 80% of violent crime is committed with a gun that's been obtained illegally. And then about 60% of those are somebody that has a repeat record. So we can advocate for the DA's office to have more funds come back so that we can make sure that they're down about 75 positions in the DA's office, so we can make sure that we have folks in those offices that can keep the folks that are doing really bad stuff off the streets. And then we need to give our officers the necessary resources through pay and benefits and infrastructure that they need to go out and do their job. We're losing officers now. Again, we're down in the 240 range. Some of that's through natural attrition. Some of it's really hard to be a police officer today.
Vi Lyles?
So when we talk about that, in addition to those things that Councilmember Smith says, I think that a mayor can actually start talking loudly about guns in our city, and that we go out and we start educating people. So the first thing I would say is please lock your car. Chief Putney has said, lock your car. Don't leave your cell phone, your spare change, and your gun in your car unlocked in your driveway, that people go in and take it and use it for criminal activity. So we have to do those small things to make big things work. But I also believe that we have two things The community policing effort has got to be intensified so that people can walk in and say, my neighbor is doing this, I'm uncertain about it. How do we actually resolve that? How do we de-escalate situations where guns are that people don't feel that they have to pull that out to resolve a situation? And then where guns are being used in violent instances, how do we concentrate on actually real police work to get in there and dissolve that escalation of violence and the crime that's taking place?
Let's talk about transit and transportation. Vial Isles, you supported building the Gold Line streetcar. Kenny Smith, you opposed building it. Why do you support it, Vi?
You know, what I've said consistently since elected is that we made a commitment to connect the east and the west side. When I came on board, the tracks were being laid, I believe, the tracks were being under construction for the connection between Presbyterian Hospital and the transit center. Any time that we can move people around a city that connects them to work or economic opportunity, I'm going to support those things. And the most important thing that I think is we have to support the trust in when we said that we were going to do something, we're going to do it. People have said that's a streetcar to nowhere. Well, that streetcar is going to Johnson C. Smith. It's going beyond Johnson C. Smith to the neighborhoods along Bates Ford Road. For years, we have said we are going to create opportunity, that we're going to build and connect our community. And we've done that in so many ways, and I'm grateful for everyone that voted for a bond referendum, people that have supported our transit tax. But that streetcar is going to be an economic development and a people mover.
So you can tell us why you opposed to Kenny Smith, but we're now in phase two of that streetcar, and I believe phase three is on the drawing boards. Would you support continuing with phase two and phase three, or would you want to stop it now, and would you keep it running on the tracks that are presently laid?
I get a lot of questions.
Short answer, though.
I'm not sure we can stop phase two. I think that's done. Phase three, we will have an opportunity, and I don't support it. So the streetcar is an antiquated form of transportation. It runs down the middle of the road. It doesn't help ease congestion. It cost per passenger will be about twice what it costs for us to move people on bus lines, which are more nimble. I don't see the economic development opportunity that my colleague sees. If you look at where we are now, you start at Hawthorne, you come past, you have the hospital, you have CPCC, then you have highway, you have uptown, then you have Johnson and Wales, Gateway, highway, and a small corridor along Bates Ford Road. What we have seen, and this was just reported recently as well, that small businesses during the construction time are facing closure in some cases, drastic reduction in profits.
That would happen if you widened the road, wouldn't it?
Not to the extent that with the streetcar. Former Mayor Knox, when we were going past his office, you may recall something in the paper that he was blocked in where he was having a hard time getting in his office. I don't think that this is the most effective way to move our citizens around Charlotte, and it's going to cost us a lot of money.
But look at the disruption the Blue Line has caused.
It's going to cost us about $100 million, and that's money that we can use for other purposes that match our priorities in a more affordable way.
Mike, can I just follow up on this? It's one of those things that, yes, while we have the little replica trolley, we've ordered two vehicles that will move more people up and down that corridor. They will be more effective and more efficient. And the question that I ask is, where are we going to build roads and where are we going to build rail lines if we are not going to take and harm the right-of-way or acquire those businesses? We've got a small amount of right-of-way to make this work. And the streetcar is going to go down the middle of our city. And I say, yes, there is a small segment, but one that's most important. Connecting Johnson and Wales to Johnson C. Smith, to me, is an important opportunity for economic development serving those people.
In truth, there was an article in the paper this morning that talked about one business going out of business because of the Hawthorne Street Bridge construction. That is for the light rail because the old bridge could not support the weight of the streetcar, rather. But When they started turning Independence Boulevard into an expressway, all of those businesses they all went out of business. So what's the difference?
Again, come back to several things. I don't think the streetcar is the most efficient, cost-effective way to get people through the city. If you go back and look, and we've had discussions on what are going to be the ongoing operational cost of the streetcar, estimated $4 to $6 million. We don't know where the money is going to come to pay that. I think we have a more effective way, cost-efficient, to get people through the city. This is not the Blue Line, which is, has had tremendous economic booms because you've got a set, you have tracks off the main road, and you have very long stretches of developable property.
Let's talk about different kinds of rail then. The Blue Line is about to open, one hopes, in the spring of next year to the university area. There are plans. We're talking now about some other kind of light rail to Huntersville as opposed to commuter rail because we can't get right of way from Norfolk Southern. Do the, both of you support further expansion of light rail or commuter rail?
I do. I support our plan. I think what we've got to figure out is not abandoning that plan, but to actually look at how to pay for it. You know, when the plan, when we started our rail study, the federal government was paying 25%, the state paid 25%, and our sales tax increase paid for the balance. And that was when everyone was committed and there was the opportunity to see those things happening. Right now, we're in a different environment, and we're going to have to figure out how to finance this. But I believe it's the only way to move people. We talk about how much rail costs. Think about how much a highway costs. They're about equal. And so when you talk about that mile of track or mile of road, and the thing that I think about our city is what neighborhood are we going to sacrifice to widen roads, and what can we do to make sure that rail moves more people and we have better air quality for our community?
Kenny Smith.
I think roads are routinely viewed as cheaper. Regarding the build-out of the our long-term transportation plan, the Silver Line is underway. We have the funds to pay for that. I think that that is going to happen. The Red Line up north is a little harder.
For people who don't know, the Silver Line goes to Matthews?
It'll go to Matthews down along the Independence Court.
Rail or bus?
It is rail.
Okay.
And then we are working to have our bus sync up so that we can get people effectively, so people can actually use mass transit. They can use a bus to get to the light rail stop and then come in town. The West Line, which will take us out to the airport and possibly beyond. Right now, I don't think we have the density to go west. I don't think that it warrants just going to the airport. I think it's the River District comes online. Again, this is a 1,300-acre project that is going to possibly land Amazon Prime, as you talked about earlier. we will have the density as that develops, I think, to eventually fulfill the obligation to go west. The line north is the toughest to figure out, and I think that's going to prove to continue to be a pretty big challenge for us. I think if they'd when this first came out, I think they would have gone north had it really been a possibility.
Let me share some other things that have come in on different topics. Michael tweets, what about support for public recreation like greenways? I believe that's a county issue, isn't it? Aren't greenways a county issue?
I think it's one that we share. You know, just think about it. If we're going to have roads and bike lanes and we can have the greenway follow some of that, even with our rail, we're going to have the Carolina Thread Trail, and we look at that as a collaborative effort with the county.
Are both of you on the same page?
Yeah, the Cross Charlotte Trail, is great. It's used a lot, but it's also an economic development engine. Mm-hmm. If you go to the backside of Park Road Shopping Center, you now have Amelie's and Midwood Smokehouse because there's going to be access from the trail to the backside of the thing, and that's throwaway space that you don't usually get. Taekwondo and dance, and I know that because that's where I take my kids to Taekwondo and dance before Amelie's in Midwood Smokehouse.
And after a long hike on the Greenway, what you need is pastry.
I think he's a barbecue guy. Might be pastry here.
Rick emails, what specifically has each candidate done and what will each do to protect our environment in the face of all of our growth? By Lyles.
You know, I've said this many times. We have all of this growth coming on. We talk about the city the size of Cleveland. We talk about 44 new people a day. Those 44 new people, every one of them brings 1.6 cars. And there is no way that we're going to be able to build for all of that vehicular traffic. So I believe that the options around our rail system, other transportation, our growing our bus system in a way that's quality. Many of you have seen it in other major cities. All of those things are going to be important. The other thing is we've got to make sure our water supply is adequate to support the economic growth that we're going to have. So paying attention to clean water is very, very important. Looking at the Catawba River and making sure that we keep it clean and safe, as well as working with our two lakes where we have nuclear energy, all of those are absolutely key. We've done a good job, but everything that we're doing now, we have to do better and recognize when change and growth occurs, we can make it better, and we have to pay attention. We have to stay woke.
So when I was on the Environmental Committee, we had several initiatives come through. One is we worked on changing out the lights throughout the city to LED, which gets rid of light pollution. They last longer. And there was a great cost and benefit analysis done, so we know that it'll be cheaper in the long run and better for the environment. We worked on working on trucks on city sites, idling times. We worked on replacing to some compression natural gas engines and some stuff, and I supported all of that. For me, it's a delicate balance between making sure that it is affordable and works and that we have the data behind it to support it.
So I have 2 minutes left. We cannot leave without talking about Amazon, which will bring tremendous growth if it comes, 50,000 jobs. Are we ready for that? And as mayor, there are several big city mayors who have said, no, we're not even going to bid on this. And it turns out more than 100 cities did bid on it. Are you willing, does the city have the resources to supply these, what are going to be called legislative incentives for Amazon? Are you in favor of doing that?
I think the city's got a program in place through our business incentive grant program to make it a reality. I'm not as confident. The state has proven time and time again that they're not going to go big. We've lost several big projects to South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Red Ventures, to name one, just moved recently. And so I think the issue would be less at the city level and it'll be more at the state level.
Viles?
Amazon is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity as long as we know what that opportunity is and what it requires of us. And so I think that we do want to do this. The thing that I hope is that after this bid has gone in, that we actually say, what do we think is most important? And for me, what Amazon does is jobs and means that we have to have an educational system to bring the talented workforce to this community. So if it's not Amazon, whatever it is, let's get ready.
15 seconds to each of you. Aaron on Facebook would like to hear each of you say something nice about the other. Kenny. Quickly, Kenny.
I've enjoyed working with Vi, and I admire her dedication to process.
I enjoy working with a Republican anytime I can.
Okay. Well, Vi Lyles, a Democrat, Kenny Smith, a Republican, both candidates for Charlotte mayor. Early voting is underway. Election day is weeks away. And evidently, it's pretty close at the moment.
2 weeks away.
2 weeks away. 2 weeks
away. My
wife
is counting the day.
Right. Well, thank you for the hour. Thank you for being with us at McGlowan Theater.